This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition.
Major Garrett, yes, CBS. Yes, hi.
Ladies and gentlemen,
please welcome Major Garrett
from the nation's capital.
Major. Fantastic.
It's The Takeout.
Major.
With CBS News Chief Washington Correspondent.
Major, that's nonsense.
Major Garrett.
And you should know better.
Thank you. Welcome to the very best part of my broadcast week. I'm Major Garrett, host and creator of this amazing program known as The Takeout, where each and every week we are two things principally, dear audience. One, relentlessly curious. Two, steadfastly non-ideological. And sometimes we're also kind of a family show. Now, I know in a general sense, we're always a family show, but today, as we have been occasionally in the past, we're a CBS family show. And we are joined by not only broadcast journalism royalty, but we are soon going to be joined by restaurant royalty. The broadcast journalism royalty, Norm O'Donnell, anchor of the CBS Evening News and managing editor of that broadcast. Nora, it's great to see you. Thanks for joining us.
Wow, thank you for my inaugural visit to
exactly.
The Takeout. Hopefully I'll be back many times.
I mentioned restaurant royalty. We're at Chef Jeff's. You know Chef Jeff, don't you, Nora?
Yes, I'm sleeping with him.
That's not a revelation to anyone.
I am married to him.
That's good. That's the good
news. Very
long exactly. Time. And he is the owner of Chef Jeff's, as well as other restaurants in Washington, some of which we have taken this show to, Tortilla Coast and Cafe Deluxe, but we're in Chef's hangout right here on New Mexico Avenue, Northwest D.C. So, Nora, I just want to talk to you a little bit about why we're doing the show with you, because it is to not only memorialize, but celebrate something very big in the history of the CBS Evening News. Tell our audience what it is if they don't already know.
We've launched the CBS Evening News here in Washington, D.C., the only evening news broadcast to originate from our nation's capital. Never before has that happened. During the Huntley-Brinkley days, they did half of their broadcast from Washington. And so this is, I think, continuing in many ways what is a history of innovation at CBS News. If people don't know, actually CBS created the evening newscast over 70 years ago. CBS was also the first to have a broadcast in color. And so hopefully this continues the tradition of CBS kind of catapulting into the future in terms of broadcasting history.
And we did a little, as you might imagine, dear audience, some promotional work to announce this. Zoe, that's soundbite number one. Let's take a listen to that.
Our nation's capital, decisions are made here that affect all of us. And today, more than ever, people want truth, understanding, and accountability. So join us every evening as we bring you CBS News original reporting from around the world.
One thing I wanted to ask you, Nora, about the idea of bringing the show to Washington. I spent a lot of time, as you well remember, on the 2016 campaign. I met a lot of Trump supporters. I met a lot of people who don't like Washington all that much. And they are displeased with what they see, or they're prepared intellectually or emotionally to tune it out. Mm-hmm. Are we trying to get them to hear from Washington more, or get them to speak their displeasure to Washington more?
The reason that we wanted to bring the broadcast to Washington is because it fits in line with the values of CBS. What are we good at CBS? We're good at reporting.
Mm-hmm.
We're good at breaking news. We're good at storytelling. And
contextualizing the day as well as reporting on it.
And CBS has always been very strong in Washington in terms of its reporting. And so it's my background being a reporter. This allows me in some ways to return back to my roots and my strengths.
You and I first met as reporters covering Congress many, many years ago.
Way back in the day when we were in our 20s.
Yes. Longer ago for me than you.
Yes. Good times. And so, but look, you know, you forget that just about every decision that affects our lives has a nexus to Washington. Think about weather. right? And extreme weather and climate change, healthcare policy. You know, everybody in America is upset about their healthcare, right? I mean, I'm upset about sometimes my healthcare.
Sure.
Trade policy. Gun policy.
Taxes.
Yes. I mean,
regulation.
Thank you for finishing my sentences. And
I only do that on this show, never anywhere else, folks.
So all of those things. I mean, for instance, just yesterday, you know, I've been wanting to do something on Rosa Parks because December 5th marks the anniversary of the Montgomery bus boycott, which then, of course, led into the civil rights movement and Rosa Parks. Well, guess what? The Library of Congress just happens to be having its the first ever exhibit of Rosa Parks. So I was able to zip over there quickly.
Right.
We'll have something on Thursday night's broadcast about that. So this is the kind of opportunities that Washington affords us and for me to really get out there and rather than just be seated at a desk anchoring.
I want to play for our audience also this, Zoe, is soundbite number two. This is you talking as you took on the anchor chair about the legacy of the very broadcast you're the managing editor of. Number two, Zoe.
There's a great legacy here at CBS News of the finest journalists. One of them was Edward R. Murrow, who eloquently captured the power of television when he said, "This instrument can teach, it can illuminate, yes, and even it can inspire, but it can do so only to the extent that humans are determined to use it to those ends. Otherwise, it's nothing but wires and lights in a box. There is a great and perhaps decisive battle to be fought against ignorance, intolerance, and indifference. This weapon of television could be useful. To Mr. Murrow, we will try to use it well and with integrity."
That is really something that I think for every one of us who is lucky enough to work for CBS is part of our inspiration. It's part of the shadow that we carry with us every single day we come to work. Edward R. Murrow and that legacy and that standard.
That was my closing, what I wrote for my closing night, anchoring the CBS Evening News. And that's a famous Edward R. Murrow speech called the Lights in a Box speech. And, you know, I was struggling the night before with what can I say that's meaningful and also inspiring to other people at CBS News. And I used that to really make the point that what we do is incredibly important in this field of journalism, and especially broadcast journalism, the box that is television, although it's no longer a box. It's now like a thin rectangle. Or it's on our phone,
it's a phone,
I guess, or whatever it is.
It's an iPad.
Yes. That it can inspire, it can illuminate. And I always say that what journalism can do is not only inspire, but it can also hold the powerful accountable. Mm-hmm. It can expose abuse. It can expose corruption. And that's the power of television, I think, in many ways, too, our reporting in Washington. We're tough on the president. We're tough on members of Congress because we're supposed to be.
Right.
That's the role of a
in
democracy.
Every direction.
That's part of a free press. It was enshrined, it's the First Amendment. They didn't make it the Tenth Amendment.
Nope.
They made it the First Amendment for a reason. And so I take that really seriously, and I think it makes our democracy stronger. And I know that makes some people not like the media or the press, but think about the abuse and corruption that the press has exposed, and it does our democracy good.
And some in my audience may know Edward R. Murrow as this kind of marble-like figure of American journalism. I want to give my audience a chance to listen to something. Broadcast on CBS, November 25th, 1960. You may know the name of this documentary, but you'll hear it at the end. Let's play that, Zoe. That's number three.
This is an American story that begins in Florida and ends in New Jersey and New York State with the harvest. It is a 1960 Grapes of Wrath that begins at the Mexican border in California and ends in Oregon and Washington. It is the story of men and women and children who work 136 days of the year and average $900 a year. They follow the sun. They are the migrants, workers in the sweatshops of the soil, the harvest of shame.
That's the name of the broadcast, The Harvest of Shame. And to your point, Nora, television journalism can be lights in a box, or it can be poetic, hold the powerful accountable, and illuminate in ways that, having spent 17 years in print journalism before I got into television, I know print can't do. Print can do many wonderful things. We and I both know this. But television has a special acute power.
It does. And you know, it's interesting. I was just talking to an investigative producer who said one of the things that we can do is explanatory journalism, right? And so we can take people with television cameras and explain what's happening somewhere in America or in Congress. And are we, you know, I think there's a burden that we face. Are we doing that with the current charges against the president and the impeachment scandal? Have we explained the importance of Ukraine to U.S. national security? Have we fully dove into, in a digestible way for the American people, about the efforts of Russia, Iran, and China to influence our elections and how they're doing it through technology and other ways? And actually, they're seeking to divide us. So anybody that thinks, oh, Americans are so divided, we are, but actually we have foreign governments that are trying to sow division and discourse.
Use that division against us. Talk about that on the program many times.
Yeah, and so, but to your point about that particular broadcast, how can we explain some of the most difficult issues of our time? Because that's important to have an informed electorate, to have a functioning democracy.
That's the voice of Nora O'Donnell. Stay with us for segment two. It's Chef Jeff's. Stay tuned.
It's harder to focus than ever these days. Thankfully, C4 has reinvented the energy drink game with C4 Smart Energy, the only energy drink clinically proven to provide enhanced mental focus, containing 200 milligrams of natural caffeine, a blend of vitamins and zero sugar. It was formulated to support your well-being and help you feel your best, all while enhancing mental focus. From your brain to your body, C4 Smart Energy does it all, and tastes amazing. Look for Smart Energy in the beverage aisle at your local Kroger, Albertsons, and Safeway grocery stores. C4 Smart Energy. Stay focused.
From CBS News, this is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Welcome back. I am with our special guest, Nora O'Donnell. We're at Chef Jeff's. That's kind of an in-family emolument, I guess, you know. The Constitution is silent on that, though,
Nora.
Did we
sign up with standards on this? Exactly. We're paying the bill.
Exactly. And there's Chef Jeff right there.
How's everybody doing?
Hello. Say hello, Chef Jeff. That's right. Look, you brought us pizza. We didn't even ask for pizza. I don't even think I'm going to get my Chef Jeff's burger. I'm just going to eat all these appetizers. There we go. So this is the highest pinnacle of service. We get you and Patrick.
Yeah, well, Patrick's better at service than I am.
Don't run yourself down, Jeff. You are doing a fabulous job.
You're an incredible slouch.
Best slouch I've ever met.
Thank you, honey.
There we go. So, yes, the broadcast is now in Washington, but it's still a national and international broadcast. And we do, at CBS, a tremendous amount of international coverage, more than our competitors oftentimes. And that is to do what? Why do we hold on to that when our competitors run in the other direction?
Well, I still happen to believe that America is the most powerful country in the world. You know, certainly our military might makes us number one in the world. You know, we contribute a lot to foreign aid, and we send our troops all around the world. And so we should report about what's happening in those places where American taxpayer dollars are going and where we're spending blood and treasure. And so Charlie Daggett has gone back and forth to Syria multiple times to explain what's going on there. Elizabeth Palmer,
yes,
to Iran, you know, behind the scenes, and also to Moscow. Holly Williams has also been in Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, each of these places where we have American interests. You know, I heard the number the other day, and that we have something now like more than 36 bases between Iraq and Afghanistan,
mm-hmm,
military bases.
Yeah.
I was stunned to hear that. I knew, because I had traveled with Donald Rumsfeld after 9/11, that part of the reason, even after, you know, this longest war that's going on in Afghanistan, that we're keeping bases there is because we want a presence there. It's almost kind of like what we're doing in South Korea,
yes,
where we've had a presence since the Korean War. Even then, there's really no war going on.
Right.
There's a strategic interest in having a foothold in that part of the world.
And a couple of months ago on this very program, we talked in Austin, Texas, to Admiral William McRaven.
Oh, he's amazing.
And he said, you know, look, we're going to stay in these places for a long time. And he said, look, when I was developing the very first counterterrorism strategy for the Bush administration after 9/11, I was told by an academic, you're putting political contours to this, and you have to, but you have to think about terrorism as the way we think about fire in our local communities.
Mm-hmm.
We station fire stations, we inform the public on ways to minimize risk, and when there's a fire, the fire department deploys. But they have to be near the place where the fire is likely to happen to be of any use. That's conceptually how we have to think about this global war on terrorism. That was a metaphor that I thought was incredibly instructive, one we don't hear very often in Washington, but actually simplifies it, illuminates it, as you described, what we're doing, and that's why we have to do these stories in Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq, and elsewhere.
Yeah, and not unlike that. You know, we always say the best way to cover a story is get as close to it as you
can.
It should
be there.
That's why our news organizations spend an enormous amount of money flying reporters all around the country to get close to a story to tell that story. Also, why we wanted to be in Washington is to get as close to a story as you can. Not only because this is a historic impeachment of the President of the United States, this inquiry, the 2020 presidential election, some of the issues that are a broken system here in Washington, and to be able to cover that story as best we can.
You've watched politics play out, as I have, for a very long time. You've seen...
Am I supposed to eat while
yes,
we talk?
Yes, you were supposed to eat, yes.
Okay. I think you should take one of those pieces of pizza and
do this?
And give it to
do
the
this?
And give it to the crew. Yeah. Close.
The crew eats behind camera.
I'm glad you're not fussy about
food. No, I'm
food.
Not fussy. No.
I'm not either.
Mm-mm.
I knew you were never a fussy type. Major Garrett.
That's right. We eat on camera. We enjoy food on camera. Mm-hmm. And we enjoy what food does. As your husband well knows, food enhances every single conversation.
It does.
Food changes everything. Mm-hmm. Food changes how you orient yourself. This isn't a bright lights, big city interrogation. As I always say, it's a conversation. So, you've watched politics and you've watched the media. We've both lived through this era of tremendous change in the media.
Mm-hmm.
The business model is under stress. People doubt us in ways they didn't when you and I first got into this business. Doubting the media has always been part of the American syndrome. But it seems more intense now. How do we address that? How do you think about that when we think about what we're doing every day?
Look, I think... you know, and part of my traveling across the country to our affiliates and talking about what the CBS Evening News is going to be, I've said, look, there are plenty of channels out there. If you're seeking affirmation, we're delivering information. And I think that's true. I mean, that's largely true of the broadcast networks. And I think CBS holds a standard, is the gold standard of journalism. And we're extremely popular in rural areas, you know, and I think many conservatives like CBS News because they think CBS News is fair. You know, more so than perhaps other channels that they may watch. And so that's one way I look at it. But I think in terms of what's driving this division, there's a couple of different factors in my view. One is you have an entire financial media complex that is making money off division and rhetoric. So you have on cable, you have Fox News Channel, where I know you used to work. You have NBC and MSNBC Comcast, where I used to be a part of that.
Right.
You have CNN. These are channels that make an enormous amount of money through subscriber fees on cable, and they are looking at a business model. And that business model, they have found out, is to offer partisan talk.
Conflict sells.
Conflict. I don't think that that's a type of media, certainly. It's a type of television. And while some of them do have elements of broadcast journalism, their sole purpose is not journalism. That's very different from what we do. We do not, we are very strict about conflicts of interest, you know, above board, that some of our, you know, those channels don't have similar standards that we adhere to. We talk to multiple sources before we report something. You know, so we have there are lots of stories we do that go through a very rigorous process. You know, on 60 Minutes, there are lawyers in the room that look
all
at things
time.
All the time, you know. There's all kinds of, you know,
and there's standards and practices that review things that are of high intensity for Evening News or CBS This Morning.
And I only say that because I want people to feel like they can trust the product that we put on the air. That doesn't mean you can't criticize us or let us know that you don't like it, but I want people to trust that process because we are trying to deliver fact-based news every day, real news that you can trust so that people can make informed decisions. I want to know what the truth is. And I also just think that, you know, I think part of what we do, too, is whether it's Steve Scalise, you know, the House minority leader, who is one of the most conservative members of Congress.
Right.
He spoke with me for 60 minutes. Joe Biden has spoken with me for 60 minutes. So, you know,
on this very program, we've had more Trump cabinet officials than any program that doesn't air on Fox.
Yes, right.
We seek out, and we've had plenty of progressive liberals who denounce, and so we have this conversation that goes back and forth.
Right.
Getting to the people who are in the room or who make the decisions is what matters,
and
both sides.
We still continue to report critically about Democrats. We report critically about Republicans when they may do something that deserves reporting, and yet we still have conversations with them. That's part of the process that has existed in the past. So I do think that's part of this financial media conglomerate that is driving apart. apart and causing division. Number two, I also think that there's a real issue that comes with redistricting in America. You and I are both old Hill rats. Mm-hmm. I used to cover a lot of congressional races. We have in this country, it started in many ways in 2000 under Newt Gingrich. It was a strategy to make districts more red and blue districts more blue so that they're easily reelected. We have less districts in America that really have you going out there and fighting to try and get some Democratic or Republican votes or moderate votes to get elected. You really just now only have to win the primary. And that makes Congress more liberal and more conservative over here and less people here in the middle.
Right. And I'm reading a book right now called The Big Sort that Anthony Salvanto, our head of polling, and I talk about regularly. And that talks about something that is in addition to redistricting, which is since the mid-1990s, Americans, because of their wherewithal, are moving into communities that are more like themselves. And we have a higher percentage than we've ever had before of landslide counties and landslide communities in our country. Even when elections are close, the neighborhoods that we live in are one or the other, liberal or conservative, and we are self-moving ourselves into places of shared values, shared orientations.
Self-segregating.
Right. And that's separate from the politicians. The politicians aren't ordering us to do that. We're doing it ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that's something that is intensifying.
Meaning we're living next to people and going to church with people and going to people that have the same political beliefs that we do. We're not spending time with people who may disagree with us and who can enlighten us to change our own views.
Exactly. That's the voice of Nora O'Donnell, our special guest here at The Takeout, because this is a family program, a CBS News family. And I'm delighted that Nora is with us. We're at Chef Jeff's. He was here delivering our appetizers. We're diving into all that. Back for segment three in just a second.
From CBS News, this is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Welcome back for segment three. Patrick, Chef Jeff was here. He says you're better than he is.
I don't know.
That's a high bar.
I don't know about that.
But Patrick, Nora, what would you like to have in addition to all these fantastic appetizers that Chef has showered upon our table?
I will have just a little small kale Caesar, since I've already eaten a couple slices of pizza, with light dressing.
Yes, and I'll have the Chef Jeff burger with cheese and bacon, please. Thank you.
Oh, that sounds so good.
Medium well, medium plus. Which is not medium well. It's in between medium and medium well. Medium plus.
I've invented it. We'll see what Jeff has to say about medium plus.
It's a thing, Nora. Trust me.
It's a thing.
It's absolutely changing the world.
Okay.
For your side, you have an option of regular fries, sweet potato fries, or small salad. Plate.
Oh, regular fries. Regular fries. That's very simple. That's very simple. Thank you, Patrick.
Of course.
Thank you.
So...
Tell my audience, Nora, which is 50 radio stations around the country, the CBSN audience, and podcast subscribers, a little bit about yourself. Is this the pinnacle job for you?
It is. You know, it was not a job that I ever thought I would have. I never thought I was going to anchor the CBS This Morning. I spent my time first as a print reporter for Roll Call. And then I joined NBC News and covered the White House, the Pentagon, and Congress. The opportunity came up to join CBS News, and they offered me the job of chief White House correspondent covering the Obama administration and also as the chief substitute on Face the Nation for Bob Schieffer. And I thought, wow, to be able to fill in for Bob Schieffer, you know, that's an incredible opportunity. And so I left NBC after about a dozen years and joined CBS and kind of just always thought that I would work here in Washington. And then after about a year of doing the chief White House correspondent job, I was offered the opportunity to join Gail King and Charlie Rose, who then anchored that program on CBS This Morning. And, you know, kind of uprooted my whole life to go to New York. And Jeff, who continued to own restaurants here, we commuted back and forth. He did most of it because the kids went to school in New York. And it was a great journey. It was a great opportunity. It really kind of stretched me journalistically. And also, when Susan Zirinsky became the president of CBS News, she offered me the opportunity.
She's been a guest on this very program.
She has? I missed that one.
You should listen to that one. It's 55 minutes of absolute Zirinsky brilliance.
She's unbelievable. Talking about someone who was there in the Washington Bureau mm-hmm. during Watergate. I mean, saw it all. In fact, did she tell you the story that when they announced, Roger Mudd has written a book that's called The Place to Be, mm-hmm. which is really about the heyday of the Washington Bureau, which was, Cronkite wanted that to compete with the Huntley-Brinkley. And so Bob Schieffer was there, Roger Mudd, Eric Severide. So when Cronkite was leaving, and Dan Rather got offered the job of evening news anchor and not Roger Mudd. Z says that she saw Roger Mudd holding a cup of coffee and that he just went like this and crushed the cup of coffee.
And it wasn't styrofoam.
Okay. She didn't say she had to do, you know, like surgery on his hand or take him to the hospital. I think it was styrofoam. But anyway, she's seen it all. So that's the... that's the quick of my at least broadcasting career. So this is not a job that I ever thought that I would do, but I'm thrilled.
Mm-hmm. And that era, we have the portraits in New York and in Washington in our bureau. If you get a chance to take a tour, there are tours made available to you. You can see them.
You have to buy them at an auction.
Yeah. Yes.
For a charity. For
yes.
A charity.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or no one, somebody.
Mm-hmm. That is to say, when you work at CBS, you live with the living embodiment of Eric Severide, Roger Mudd, Bruce Morton, mm-hmm. Connie Chung, all these people who defined, I think for an entire generation, if not two generations, how you meld journalism and television.
Sure.
How you take the sensibilities of the career that you and I both started in, print journalism, mm-hmm. the rigor, the intensity, the focus, and then wrap it around this special medium, which is evocative, which creates emotion, which mm-hmm. creates responses.
Sure.
Video and audio bring an emotional response in ways that print medium simply cannot.
Absolutely. And there's a different way. I mean, I can remember as a print journalist for Roll Call, then joining NBC News, and writing for television is a lot different
Completely.
Than writing for print, you know, writing to sound bites. It's a much different craft.
Matching
and it's a
your
skill.
Words to the pictures, not overwriting them,
yeah.
but learning how to underwrite, learning how just to say enough that let the pictures carry the emotion and the information.
Yeah, and we're in a new era now with this president because whether you like him or not, he is an incredibly effective communicator for his own goals. I like to tell the story that when I covered George W. Bush and was out there when he was governor of Texas and his first trip from Iowa to New Hampshire, it was called the Great Expectations Tour. And Bush used to always say about us, the media, he'd say, "You guys are the filter." The filter. I hate talking through the filter. Well, Trump has managed to do away with the filter.
Mm-hmm.
There is no filter on Twitter. He gets to say exactly what he wants. It gets disseminated. There's no press releases really
nope.
anymore at the White House. He just puts it out.
There are no press briefings.
There are no press briefings.
There's just him.
The president just goes out to the lawn and speaks while the chopper is swirling around, and it's difficult for reporters to ask questions. So that's how much it has changed, even just in you know my short period as a journalist covering the White House about how presidents communicate.
And it's also true of this president, and if Stephanie Grisham, his now third press secretary here, which she would say it, he's the most accessible president ever. He takes more questions than any president in the modern era. And that's certainly been my experience. My experience goes back to President Clinton. Donald Trump will talk to us all the time. Nearly 2 hours yesterday in
yeah.
London.
Mm-hmm.
Three different photo opportunities that turned into mini press conferences.
Yeah.
Because he knows he can command the stage. He loves to command the stage. And he loves to churn that which he uniquely, as president, can churn in the media atmosphere.
Which is remarkable, I mean, as you know, for someone who's covered other White Houses. And certainly there's always been a contentious relationship between the press and the president. Think about Bill Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
He hated the press. The Clintons hated the press because there were so many investigations of, you know, what the Clintons were doing. You know, think of the Lincoln bedroom scandal, whether they were auctioning off, you know, areas of the White House for access, for donations, the Whitewater scandal. Paula
Travel
Jones.
Office,
yes.
Everything.
I mean, so that was, but that's part of the oversight that the press certainly does. You know, Obama, his Justice Department investigated more journalists than any other
Attempted to jail them. Rosen and James Risen in particular.
That's right. So
Donald Trump's never done that. I point that out to audiences all the time
yes.
who say Donald Trump is the worst thing of the press. I said, well, yes, his rhetoric is the worst. No question. But he hasn't tried to jail anybody.
Yeah.
And Obama did it twice.
Yeah. So each of these are, you know, I mentioned that contentious relationship. But this president is so different because of how he rhetorically lambasts the press in calling the press the enemy of the American people. And that's a phrase that has not been used from the presidents that I've covered.
Right. And will be part of his obituary whenever that day comes.
Yeah.
You will never be able to escape that. Mm-hmm. Tell my audience a little bit about your upbringing.
So my parents, my mom's parents are off the boat from Ireland. And so my mother grew up in Queens. My dad's from Staten Island. My dad was drafted during the Vietnam War while he was in med school. So it was the tail end of the Vietnam War. So we didn't end up going to Vietnam, but then spent the next 30 years in the U.S. Army. So I'm an Army brat. You know, I grew up in an Army family. I lived on military bases all around the world. In Landstuhl, Germany, when I was younger. Then we went to San Antonio, Texas, where I spent most of my childhood. And then did a two-year term in, lived in Seoul, South Korea, on Yongsan Air Base, there in Seoul, South Korea. And then came back and did high school in San Antonio, Texas. So I consider myself an Army brat and a Texan.
Mm-hmm.
And then went to Georgetown University, which is where I met Chef Jeff in the cafeteria.
Right. You know? You got a philosophy degree.
Amongst food. Yeah.
You got a philosophy degree, right?
I got a degree in philosophy, in part because I loved reading and writing. You know, and I do love, I did take Latin, of course, too, but I don't read Latin or Greek. But I just loved the study
of languages anyway. It's okay.
Yeah. But I did love the study of ancient philosophy and turned out to be a great major for becoming a journalist.
Why? In 30 seconds, why does philosophy help as a journalist?
Critical thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Critical thinking and the belief in absolute truth. I mean, you can be a relativist too, but belief in an absolute truth.
Or the search for it, absolutely.
And the search for it. And I do believe there are facts, and I do believe there are absolute truths.
That's the voice of Nora O'Donnell. We're very happy to be at Chef Jeff's here on Northwest Washington, D.C. It's a busy time in Washington for sure, and we're also celebrating and memorializing the move of an important legacy broadcast in America, the CBS Evening News, to Washington, D.C. The managing editor of that broadcast is Nora O'Donnell. The anchor of that broadcast is Nora O'Donnell. She's our special guest. Back for segment four in just a second.
From CBS News, this is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Welcome back. Nora O'Donnell is our special guest, anchor and managing editor of the CBS Evening News, my friend and my colleague. And I'm very happy that she's joined us as we celebrate and memorialize the move of the CBS Evening News to Washington, D.C., where it's Chef Jeff's.
This truffle popcorn is so good.
Who makes it? Is that another Chef Jeff creation?
It's a Chef Jeff creation, but he's not making it.
That's
everybody
right.
That's talented in the kitchen. Mm-hmm.
And just in case you missed segment one, Nora O'Donnell sleeps with Chef Jeff. Those are her words, not mine, because they're married. That's okay, kids. Don't worry about it. It's not a scandal. So you have been on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert.
Mm-hmm.
I have been lucky enough to be on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. It's a heady experience.
It is, yeah.
It's wild to see how hard he works and how he preps the audience and how engaged the audience is. And I don't know about you, Nora, but as I stood behind stage, I'm like, what if they don't do anything?
Yeah.
What if I'm announced and like, who? And I say things and they're like, what?
Oh, the audience, you mean?
That's all dead. It's like you're just dying out there. I'm like, I'm so afraid of this. Happily, it went okay. Went great for you. But I want to play something. Zoe, get ready for this. It's number five. So the great comedic writers with Stephen Colbert put together rejected sign-offs for the CBS Evening News. This was on July 19th, 2019. So that's number five.
These are the rejected sign-offs that Nora O'Donnell did not want to say.
I'm Nora O'Donnell, and you can't make this stuff up, folks.
Okay, would have been good. Would have been good. Guess one.
Good night, and good luck with all that. I'm Nora O'Donnell, and that Nora O does it.
That was pretty good.
That's okay. Good. That's good. Yeah. And that is the CBS Evening News. Wow, I need a drink.
Okay, let's just say this, folks. There have been times I've been on the North Lawn of the White House, and I've handed back the broadcast to you, Nora, and I thought to myself,
wow,
I need a drink.
Yes. Because it is sometimes, and certainly covering this White House, it's like sipping water from a fire hose.
I often say it's like sipping from seven.
Yeah, right.
There's not just one. I wish there were one. I sometimes say I would take one fire hose. I'm kind of used to that in Washington.
Yeah.
But seven, it feels like some days.
It does. It does. Not only is there just so, because the president is voluminous.
Yes.
He's verbose.
Loves to be.
Yes. But then just the level of detail of everything that goes through, not only fact-checking the president and everything he says, that takes time, it takes effort, but also just, for instance, every detail of, for instance, the impeachment inquiry.
Right.
You know, all of the information with that. So it's unlike anything I've ever been a part of.
So when I talk about being managing editor of the Evening News, maybe some in my audience would say, what does that mean? Help them understand. What does that mean?
So that is a title that not every anchor of either the evening news or other evening broadcasts has had. It's a one that people seek. You know, Tom Brokaw had it, certainly. Scott Pelley had it. Walter Cronkite. And it means not only that you anchor the program, but that you're an editor of the program. So in that, there's a certain responsibility that goes along with that in terms of developing the structure of the program. And so we have many journalists that contribute to the program, and we have writers and producers that all put it together. But I do try and read through every script, and everything that I read are, you know, those are words that I've signed off on beforehand.
Right.
And certainly I have a role in what goes on the show every night, deciding which stories we want to cover. And so that's what the managing editor title means.
And there is an idea or a notion sometimes in television that someone's a presenter or reader. This elevates that. You're still a reader. You're still a presenter. I've been fortunate enough at times to substitute for you. Mm-hmm. I've felt what that feels like. It's a special responsibility, how you hold the broadcast, how you present it.
Yeah.
That's not an immaterial part of this process at all.
Sure.
But the editorial process takes it to another level.
Yeah. Sometimes people on television are referred to as talent.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly takes a lot of talent to do television. There's no
doubt. In my case, I always put that in double quotation marks.
But there is, you know, you certainly have to be able to write your own scripts. You have to be able to report and be able to get people on the phone. You have to actually break news, which is hard to do. You know, it's hard to really separate spin from what is actual reporting.
Exactly.
And report that. And so that's part of, you know, the challenge every day is how do we want people to watch the CBS Evening News. Why? Because it's going to be more than what you got on your phone and that alert. It's going to be more than what you read in the newspaper. It's going to be more than what you saw on cable television. It's context, depth, clarity. It's breaking news. And I do think we already do that every night. Mm-hmm. Your reporting is that. Our international correspondents, I mean, they've been doing this for decades. It's just really one of the, always been the brightest spot of CBS News is our international coverage, probably because of Edward R. Murrow and his broadcast out of London during World War II. So that legacy continues.
And I've read interviews that you've done where you talked about certain stories that got to you emotionally after Las Vegas and the shooting there. Other stories, natural disasters, where you see, as we often see in journalism, the juxtaposition, the almost incomprehensible juxtaposition of tragedy and intervention that's heroic, that's humane, that's uplifting.
Sure.
And trying to put all that together, and also as you're trying to hold it yourself.
Yeah. I mean, look, one of the great things about being a journalist is having a front row seat to history. Now, that's true being a White House correspondent, no doubt.
No doubt.
Because you're sitting in the front row of that press briefing room. But as anchor, managing editor of the CBS Evening News, when you travel to Las Vegas, and then I was anchoring the morning show, and then to go into someone's hospital room who had a bullet go right by their spine and were almost paralyzed, and to sit by someone's bedside and talk to them about how they feel, that's one of the hardest things about this job. And in some ways I find calling up or asking tough questions to a politician or to a crown
infinitely
prince
easier.
Infinitely easier and such more in my comfort zone than talking to someone who has just lost a family member. I mean, oh my gosh, you know, we just did that in El Paso, the Walmart shooting, and to go inside someone's house and ask them about a parent that is now deceased because of a gunman. It's just, you know, you feel uncomfortable asking someone questions.
Because
you don't want to, but yet they do. They invite us into their home because they want to bring focus to that. And so that's a really solemn moment.
Mm-hmm. They trust you even though you're an intrusive outsider.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to balance that reality. You're an intrusive, you're intruder.
Right.
We in that role are intrusive.
Yeah.
And yet we have to establish a rapport, a sense of trust, a sense of an emotional connection, and you have to do it really quickly.
Yeah. And the only thing I would say about that, just because the word intrusive in some ways, I think of an intruder, you know? And the interesting thing is, if you ask someone, most of the time people want to talk.
Mm-hmm.
I
right.
find that they really do. How you ask
matters.
Is incredibly important. And people do ultimately, everyone at the heart of a human experience is to be heard and to be understood. And so we, I think, in some ways, too, also offer people the opportunity to be heard, to be understood, certainly when they've been through a traumatic experience, when they've gone through abuse at the hands of an institution, like the Catholic Church, let's say, for instance. I mean,
or the Air Force.
Or the Air Force, when we did those. That is one of the most emotional stories I've ever done, is talking to cadets at the U.S., female cadets at the U.S. Air Force Academy who had been sexually abused. Yeah.
And then dropped out and watched their perpetrator graduate.
Yeah.
That's one of the most famous sound bites of your Emmy award-winning investigation.
Yeah. I mean, I worked with Jennifer Janisch on this for 6 months, and she worked so hard to get many of these cadets to talk to us. I mean,
because
they're not supposed to talk to the press. They're not even supposed to leave the base in order to talk to us. And these women, you know, anybody who gets into a military academy, if you know, you not only have to be academically superior, you have to be athletically superior. So I think, you know, these are the toughest women I've ever met.
Right.
And then have suffered sexual abuse and sexual harassment, and then to watch them sob in front of me, I just thought, what are we doing? What are we doing to our best and brightest? And that reporting was recognized by an Emmy, and I still think about those women to this day and why the military really needs to clean it up, because we need more women serving, not less.
That's the voice of Nora O'Donnell, our very special guest. Stay tuned for the Takeout Outtake Especial, where Chef Jeff will bring us some family secrets, maybe. I'm Major Garrett. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.
For more from this week's conversation, download the Takeout Outtake Especial Tuesday morning, wherever you get your podcasts. The Takeout is produced by Arden Farren, Jamie Benson, Sarah Cook, and Ellie Watson. CBSN production by Eric Susanen and Grace Seegers. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Takeout Podcast. That's at Takeout Podcast. And for more, visit takeoutpodcast.com. The Takeout is a production of CBS News Radio.
If you like The Takeout, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
I'm Mo Rocca, and I'm excited to announce season 4 of my podcast, Mobituaries. I've got a whole new bunch of stories to share with you about the most fascinating people and things who are no longer with us. From famous figures who died on the very same day to the things I wish would die, like buffets. Listen to Mobituaries with Mo Rocca on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.